Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Caritas. Today is Monday, May 24th, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast is This System Overload. I hope you enjoyed your weekend. Oh, this very well could be the beginning of the end if we are monitoring closely some signs within the financial plumbing system. So you're going to have to put on your memory hats for a moment and go back to 2019, which seems like a lifetime ago. But if you recall, during the third to fourth quarter of 2019, there was a blow up at the Federal Reserve with their repo program. All right, basically overnight lending. We covered this at length when it occurred because it was a big news story then. This, as far as I'm concerned, is going to be a very important time in economic history. So when the economic historians have time and they can go back and they look on this era, they're going to look at the fourth quarter of 2018, which we talk about here all the time, and they're also going to look at this repo madness, this repo breakdown. In September, it's when it began, in September of 2019. Those are going to be two very crucial time points when we started to see the system collapse and we saw some big breaks. Then, of course, shortly thereafter, we get the pandemic. So then with the pandemic, all of these policymakers, all of these politicians, they can now use the pandemic as an excuse, a very convenient excuse, to get away with whatever they want to get away with. Short of murder. Oh, maybe it was. So during that problem in September 2019, short-term rates, which the Federal Reserve controls, were out of control. Double digits. In some instances, on an overnight basis, because that's what we're talking about, overnight. Overnight lending between institutions. Typically, this will occur between institutions within the marketplace. They don't have to go to the Federal Reserve seeking money. And they're seeking cash because they have to maintain their reserve requirements. It has to be at a certain level, at a minimum, to meet the regulatory requirement. Well, rates skyrocketed, double digits. We're talking at the lower bound here, folks. Okay, so this is a huge increase. This is not supposed to happen. This is supposed to be under the control of the Federal Reserve. Now, maybe you can make an argument that, well, okay, something a little bit higher. This wasn't a little bit higher. This was a lot a bit higher. This was crazy. Something was breaking. And I attempted to do my best at researching this, listening to as many people as I possibly could, reading as many articles as I possibly could. And at the end of the day, after bringing everything together, I don't think anybody understood what truly happened. People who were at various checkpoints, if you will, along the plumbing of the financial system, they couldn't piece it together. They had their theories. They think, well, maybe it could have been this, maybe it could have been that, but nobody knows. And so for us to believe that the Federal Reserve understands this, give me a break, not even close. So you see this spike, we saw this spike in overnight rates, again back in 2019, presumably because institutions, if they were going to lend money to other institutions, were saying, you must be a high risk, because this is just an overnight loan. So I'm going to get paid back the next day. Somebody's saying, well, I don't know if I'm going to get paid back the next day. So in order for me to feel comfortable, you're going to have to pay me a higher interest rate. And that's what happened. And then we were, of course, told that this was that it was just going to be temporary, too. That blow up in the repo market, that was just going to be temporary. Don't worry about it. They chalked it up saying, it's just the end of the quarter. You know, it's an extra need for cash because it's, you know, it's a quarter end. So there's tax implications and this, that, or the other. It's just seasonal. This will go away in a couple weeks. Don't worry about it. And I remember this conversation with the audience then, and I said, okay, we'll be nice. We'll be nice for a couple of days. We'll see what happens. We'll give the Federal Reserve the benefit of the doubt, and maybe it will be a couple of weeks. I called BS on that, of course, and said this is going to be much longer, and it was. It was. It was a couple of weeks, then it was a month, then it was a couple months, and then it was into the new year that the Federal Reserve was going to have their standing repo facility because there was no marketplace. Institutions were not trusting each other, similar to what took place in the Great Financial Crisis. The banks weren't trusting each other to give each other loans on an overnight basis to meet reserve requirements. That's what that was reminiscent of. Now we have to deal with the reverse of that, and it's called reverse repo, and we're going to get to that. There's an article out of MarketWatch that talks about this, and we have some other numbers to get to. But is this a point in time where we are starting to reach system exhaustion? It doesn't have to be a black swan event. It doesn't have to be an exogenous shock to the system like a pandemic or some other type of geopolitical event, like a war breaking out or a major conflict somewhere. It can be the system hitting its point of exhaustion. I've mentioned that many times before because that's a simple possibility. You can't run this type of debt. You can't run this type of balance sheet at the Federal Reserve, the ECB, the People's Bank of China, etc. You cannot continue to do this. There's going to be a point in time where you just overwhelm and overload the system. You can only run for so far. You can only eat or drink so much before you just pass out, give way. Can't do it anymore. Same thing with the financial system. It can only take so much. So many distortionary effects caused by this. And when this thing blows up, and it will, because economic gravity will eventually take hold, no matter what politician in what country does what, no matter what central bank in what country does what, market forces will prevail. Economic gravity will grab hold. And then there's going to be nothing that these policymakers can do. And it's only going to be look out below because that's where we're going. It ain't going to be to all new, you know, new all-time highs. That's what we're witnessing now. Because that remains the only narrative that matters. Central bank liquidity injections, equity markets continue to grind higher. That's it. Once that narrative breaks down, and this might be it, these might be some of these four shocks now that we're starting to witness. That might be game over. This is their only tool. This is all they have left. Because it's a con job. They are just trying to instill confidence in the system. This is a system that does not deserve our confidence or our trust. And we have trillions upon trillions of reasons to not trust these people. So we're going to get to that article here momentarily, but I just wanted to sort of set the stage as to what I'm talking about, because this is big news. It gets some coverage, not as much as it deserves, and that's no coincidence as far as I'm concerned. So market performance, we have Chilean producer prices increasing 25.4% from a year earlier for the month of April. 25.4% producer prices in Chile, and the reason I bring this up is because this is the backdrop of protests and riots. The Chileans were on strike not too long ago. We talked about this in a couple of podcasts because the people of Chile wanted to tap into their pension funds for a third time during this pandemic because these people are struggling and they're suffering. So they're tapping into their pensions. But another reason I bring this up is because Chile is a major producer of copper. The largest, actually. And we may have some legislation coming down the pipe in Chile that wants to be quote-unquote green, wants to be environmentally sound. So that means that they might shut down some of these copper mines. And copper prices have only been on a tear, making all-time highs, but that we, you know, we don't pay any attention to that. And also don't pay any attention that copper is going to have to be used for this quote-unquote green economy. I'm speechless because of the stupidity that we have to listen to every single day. It's something else. I don't know how these people make this stuff up. Every single day, it's something else. I don't think these environmentalists or these proponents of the Green New Deal and his, you know, beautiful green global economy, I don't think they know what the hell they're talking about. Where are you going to get all the materials from to build this massive infrastructure? What are you going to get? What are you going to do? Give everybody baseball gloves and say, go catch the sun? That's not how it works. So get ready for much, much higher energy prices, utility prices out the wazoo. Because these people are the ones who are in charge. I don't know how they got there, but they're there. And I don't think they're leaving anytime soon. So I'm just bringing that back so it's in the front of your mind that a country that was dealing with protests in 2019 recently again and is a large producer of copper might be getting shut down. Prices are going to spike. Do you see? Can you connect the dots on this? I sound like a broken record. I understand this. I wish this wasn't the case. But every single day, it just spin the globe, stop your finger on a country, and it's more ridiculousness after the next. Oh, God help us. Dollar index 89, spot 75, 89, spot 75. Bitcoin is currently down another percent at $38,400 a coin. Bitcoin, if you've been watching it over the weekend, was whipsawing once again. We have CEO of Tesla, Elon Musk, putting out more tweets about the crypto space, Bitcoin in particular on some of them. I mean, isn't this supposed to be a decentralized network? Then how can one guy in, what's Twitter now, 140, 280 characters for a tweet, if you use all of them, can move a supposed $1 to $2 trillion market with a simple tweet? Oh, no, but don't worry about it. It's decentralized. Nobody can control it. Yeah, but this idiot can. With a few strokes of his thumbs. I mean, we had President Thunder Thumbs. Now we got this idiot. I'm going to have to come up with a nickname for Elon Musk with this stuff. I mean, it is aggravating, it is disappointing, and it's frustrating because I think a lot of people are going to get hurt by this guy. And not just him, but so many others who are just blindly promoting something that they can't fully grasp or explain. And if you can't fully explain it, then you don't fully grasp it. If you want to tell me again, as I've been stating, if you just want to tell me that you're buying a lottery ticket and you think you're going to win with Bitcoin or some other cryptocurrency, fine. I'll at least have some respect for you. But don't make up a story. Don't constantly change your story to fit whatever narrative you have to spin to justify what you're trying to sell me. It's not how it works. Just tell me it's speculation, it's a lottery ticket, you don't want to do the 9-to-5 grind anymore, you're hoping for the big win. I can understand that, but don't make stuff up and don't lie to people because you're going to end up hurting more people than you do help. That's my problem with it. And when you have somebody like Elon Musk, he's the CEO of one of the largest companies on the planet. Shouldn't he take this a little bit more seriously? Or is he just that much of a media whore where he needs constant attention 24/7? And if that's the case, well, then I think his board members and shareholders need to have a sit down and a chit chat with them. Because it's not constructive at all. And I also think Mr. Musk may know that the show is up. That he is also near some sort of system overload himself. Because we just saw demented Joe Biden at a Ford Motor factory test driving the new F-150 Lightning, the electric truck that's going to be coming out of Ford. Well, where's Elon Musk's truck? I mean, I thought that thing was hideous, but nonetheless, some people may have liked it. That's fine, to each his own. Where's that truck? Isn't he a genius? Isn't this the best company on the planet? Isn't that what we're told? Tesla, Tesla, Tesla? Where's the truck? Where is it? Is it going to compete with the F-150 Lightning? And maybe whatever Chevy comes out with and Dodge and et cetera, et cetera? The guy now has to compete. Is he going to be able to compete with all of these other car manufacturers? I don't think so. So this is what he has left. He has the con game left. He has the confidence game left. He has the distraction game left. And that's what he's doing on a daily basis. Overnight futures trading, we have the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ 100 all in the green, up about 0.25% each. All major indexes were in the green for the day here in the States and pretty much across the board. On the commodity front, we have WTI at $66.13, Brent at $68.59, natural gas back below $3, but still close to the $3 handle at $2.89, gasoline $2.12. Gold and silver both had a nice day, but both are currently pulling back overnight. Gold at $1,876 an ounce, silver at $27.59. Copper is up about 0.8%, currently at $4.58 per pound. And lumber pulled back just a little bit, about 1%, to trade at $1,439 per 1,000 linear board feet. So getting back to the precious metal space, as we get closer to the end of May already, if you can believe it, I want to see a close, a monthly close on the gold price above 1870. If it can be a little bit above that at like 1890, that is really going to, I think, bring a lot of attention back to gold. If silver can close the month out at $28 or above it, same situation. I think gold and silver are sniffing out that the fact that the Federal Reserve and other central banks are trapped. They know that inflation is here, that it is not transitory, that it is structural, that it is something that we are going to have to contend with on the global front for years to come. And I say years to come because that's what I believe it's going to be for a whole host of reasons. And they are just starting to, well, they have been, they've been forming a very solid base, in my opinion, gold and silver. Because we've seen this consolidation period really since they made all-time highs last summer. So this is just shaking out a lot of the weak hands. That's what markets do. That's what markets are known for. Shaking out the weak hands, seeing who's committed, whether that's commodities, precious metals, equities, whether you're playing growth, momentum, whether you're playing value, stocks, whatever the case may be, that's what markets are known for. You want to test your resolve. Can you deal with certain volatility? Can you deal with these periods of consolidation, and maybe even sell-offs? And of course, that's an argument that some people with Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies will make. They're here for the long term, this is just a shakeout, whatever. And maybe that's the case. Maybe we will continue on to all-time highs, but that doesn't take away all of those questions that I ask constantly here that need to be answered, that they do not answer. If a whole bunch of people want to rush into this market, crypto space, and throw a ton of cash at it, well, then I guess it's going to catch a bid and prices will go up. Doesn't mean that's where they should be, but it can happen. We witnessed it before. We could very easily witness it again. But I think with precious metals, that's all this is. It's a period of consolidation, shaking out the loose and the weaker hands, building that base. And when this thing moves, I think it's going to move very rapidly to the upside when certain prices are taken out. And we could very well be there by the end of this year. And to round it out, Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note is yielding 1.61%. So this has been consolidating for the past couple of months. And dare we say that this is some sort of yield curve control. Now, the Federal Reserve won't admit that that's what this is, if that's what they're doing. Consolidation, as I just stated, happens all the time in various markets. Maybe that's all this is. It's wait and see what the market ends up doing, if they go back up, if they go lower, what's going to happen. All I know is, again, using the fourth quarter of 2018 as a reference, if we see the 10-year back about 2%, I don't think the markets can handle it. I don't think the financial markets can handle it. I don't think the broader economy can handle it, because we couldn't deal with it. Again, in the fourth quarter of 2018, and they were a little bit higher than that, about 3.3%. Okay? There's no way we're getting back to that level. There's no way. and there not being a blow up. It's quite possible that interest rates will go higher than that. I mean, if we had a free market economy, I think they'd be much higher than that, personally speaking. But we don't have a free market system, so we have a manipulated and distorted system. But even that, I think, is starting to give way. The system is much more fragile as a result of these nonsense and criminal policies that we have implemented. This is not going to end well. But we're not supposed to know that. We're not supposed to know about reverse repo either. But this is out of Market Watch, and I'm glad that they put this out there, and I really hope that this story gains more traction, because this is what it's all about at the end of the day. It's that narrative of liquidity injections moving equity markets higher. When that breaks down, and it's just a matter of when, that's it. So this is Market Watch. Why demand for Fed's reverse repo facility is surging again. A key artery of global financial markets may be telling the Federal Reserve that enough is enough. Well, it's about time. Demand for an overnight funding through the Federal Reserve Bank of New York's Overnight Reverse Repo Program, RRP, has begun to flirt with recent record highs after almost no one used it for months. Daily repo usage jumped to $394.94 billion on Monday after topping $369 billion on Friday, its highest level since the end of June 2017. The Fed's reverse repo program lets eligible firms like banks and money market mutual funds park large amounts of cash overnight at the Fed in exchange for a small return, which lately has fallen to about 0.06%. Oh boy, you're going to get rich off of this. 0.06%. The program had almost no customers in early April, and few since the pandemic's onset last spring. But daily demand in recent weeks has shot up dramatically. This chart shows the spike in reverse repo demand since April 1st. Not a pretty chart, like the article says, virtually nil in early April and almost making all-time highs currently. So why are they going to the Fed? Asked Scott Scrim, Executive Vice President in Fixed Income and Repo at Curvature Securities, of firms wanting reverse repo funding despite its dwindling returns. He says either there is too much cash or not enough collateral. It's two sides of the same coin. He's exactly correct. It's also pretty much the opposite of what happened in September of 2019, when repo rates suddenly skyrocketed, resulting in the Fed jumping in with a slate of short-term emergency lending facilities that helped calm fears that financial markets might otherwise freeze up. So again, the repo market, September 2019, not enough liquidity in the system because the Federal Reserve was still pretty much tapering, increasing interest rates a little bit here or there. Now, of course, some of that stopped because of what took place in the fourth quarter of 2018, but you have these lags with monetary policy, with fiscal policy, and the economy was weak. Despite what we were told by our dear leaders, the economy was weak. But we had that covered here at the Federal Reserve. That's why we saw this implosion of the repo market. So this time, Scrim, the market analyst, views high demand for the Fed's low return reverse repo facility as a sign that the central bank's roughly year-old $120 billion a month bond buying program no longer works as intended by adding liquidity to financial markets and should be scaled back. He continues, right now, the more money you put in, you get it right back. The market is saying it's time. There is the evidence that QE has gone too far. Well, I couldn't agree with that anymore. I mean, QE is out of control. It shouldn't even exist. We have famed hedge fund manager Stanley Druckenmiller giving some interviews recently, once again calling the Federal Reserve to task, saying this is nonsense, saying this is creating this massive gap in wealth inequality, which, of course, is again, the intersection of economics, politics, and social issues. That's going to be a driving force, globally speaking. It really is. So he's out there against Stanley Druckenmiller saying this is nonsense. This cannot continue. When he talks to his wealthy friends, he says they're all making money hand over fist. Not because they're geniuses, but because we got these idiots at the Federal Reserve pumping the system with liquidity. That's all this is, folks. It's all it's been. It's a con job. It's a Ponzi scheme. They're hoping you don't pay attention. They're hoping you don't ask for your money. Just like Bernie Madoff. The Fed under Chairman Jerome Powell has purchased $2.5 trillion in bonds since the pandemic broke out last year. Through its monthly purchases of U.S. Treasuries and agency mortgage bonds or quantitative easing, as we discuss here on a weekly basis. So $2.5 trillion in government debt just since the pandemic. Our national debt is about $28 trillion, a little bit over that. So we're almost at 10%. That's how much the Federal Reserve purchased in 1 year alone. You understand the context and perspective of what's going on here? Can you understand why I say that this is a first world banana republic? And it's only going to get worse from here. Because if this is system overload and the system does collapse, what are they going to do? Are they just going to say, oh, we're not going to do anything? No, they're going to get in and they're just going to put the pedal to the metal even more than what they're doing now. $2.5 trillion, about 10% of Uncle Sam's debt that they purchased in 1 year alone. That's because nobody else wants it, because everybody else knows it's junk, because it is. And every other country's debt is junk as well. That's why all of their central banks are purchasing theirs, because nobody else wants it. This is ridiculous. Continuing, this adds liquidity to the system. Quantitative easing does. As the Fed buys bonds, those sellers receive the liquidity and likely buy other bonds or other products with it. We understand this. We talk about this here all the time. So the article continues, blah, 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 not too much else. But that's the point. The system is reaching a state of overload, a state of exhaustion. Does it mean it's going to collapse? Could. It could. That's a possibility. Is it going to be a slow burn? That's a possibility as well. But this cannot continue. And you have some of these analysts in this article saying, well, we hope that the Federal Reserve starts to mention tapering in their June meeting, FOMC meeting. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. Are they going to talk about it? I mean, they put one idiot Fed member out on a daily basis, sometimes multiple Fed speakers out on a daily basis to calm the markets, to convince them that, hey, we're going to continue to do what's necessary, continue to push the narrative that, hey, inflation, if it exists, is only going to be transitory and we have tools to combat it should it get out of hand. Nothing to worry about. No, there's a lot to worry about. But they're never going to cop up to it. They're never going to say that, yeah, we messed up. We went too far. What's going on in the repo markets, that's just temporary too. There's nothing to see here. Don't pay any attention to it. They don't even get asked these questions. So I hope during the next FOMC meeting, I mean, because we kind of got our wish last time. We finally started getting some tougher questions here asked of Jay Powell, the chair of the Federal Reserve, last time. Maybe somebody will ask this question of Jerome Powell. What's going on with the reverse repo market? Why is this getting out of control? Why was there nobody there a couple of months ago? And now everybody and their mother needs money, needs to take place in this market. What's going on? And what are you going to do about it? Because you told us in September of 2019 that was just going to be temporary, and it wasn't. You extended it for months. Are you going to tell us this is temporary too? How can we trust you? And if we couldn't trust you then, how can we trust you now? We couldn't trust you with repo. How can we trust you with inflation? We couldn't trust Ben Bernanke in the Federal Reserve during the Great Financial Crisis saying quantitative easing was going to be temporary. It's not. We couldn't trust Ben Bernanke when he said that the subprime crisis was only going to be contained to subprime. Wasn't true. How are they going to be right this time? And the answer is they're not going to be right this time. But the question we have to ask is who's going to hold them to account? because they continue to get away with this time after time after time. Same thing with politicians. At least you can vote these people in and out of office. These policymakers are appointed, approved, and never held to account. Which, to me, makes it un-American. We are supposed to be a system of checks and balances. Hold people responsible. Have some accountability. There's nothing here. We can't do anything with these people. What are we going to do? No politician's going to go after them either. Because politicians love this. Whether they're Democrats, Republicans, they love it. Because they don't have to come back home to you and say, we got to raise your taxes. We got to cut your benefits. Got to tighten the belt. Nobody wants to hear it. It's not politically expedient, but what is politically expedient is acting like a banana republic. Oh, yeah, just print the money, and you mean I don't have to go home and tell my people that we got to raise their taxes or cut their benefits? Oh, hallelujah, praise the Lord. Thank goodness. Print the money, do what you got to do. I don't care about inflation. Ah, that's what we're dealing with here, folks. And tomorrow I want to talk about, because we're getting near the half-hour mark here, I want to talk about what's going on with COVID-19 and how the narrative with COVID-19 is starting to change. I don't believe that this is a coincidence because I don't believe in coincidences. That we've seen too many stories here. We've seen too much crap over the past couple of years with one thing after the next. And I just don't believe in coincidences. But we no longer see Bill Gates, at least not as much as we used to. Dr. Fauci is under the microscope now. Getting called out for some of the things that have taken place there. Whether this virus really did originate out of a lab in Wuhan. You know, before that was a conspiracy theory, now it's mainstream news. So why? Why the pivot? Why the pivot? The Jeffrey Epstein story coming back in vogue? Those police guards testifying, or stating, I should say, that they falsified records? Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on, and it's a head-scratcher, but I think something's coming. And maybe it's a distraction from system overload. I'll keep you up to date. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I'm Alex Caritas. Godspeed.